This is Jerry Pippin, and we have John Vasquez on the phone, and he's in San Diego. And he has a book out called Incident at Fort Benning. And we've done a show about an incident at Fort Benning. We're going to find out if it's the same incident or not involving UFOs. John, how are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
Fine. Tell me a little bit about this incident at Fort Benning and when it happened and what it was.
Well, I like to start from the beginning. When I first arrived here at Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 1st Infantry, Fort Benning, it's an outpost. And this outpost has three other companies, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie Company, and ours, which is Delta Company. Each company consists of 300 men, so there's total, roughly around 1,300. Yeah, because you got to consider the officers, non-commissioned officers, the kitchen crew, and a supply crew. So September 2nd, 1977. Our first day, and it was really busy that whole day. Everybody's trying to get to their barracks, and then gathering linens, being assigned to bunks, being acquainted with each other, asking people where they're from and what they do, and it was really.
So in other words, this was your first day you arrived at this, for lack of a better term, a base camp?
Yes, sir, that's correct. Combat training.
Okay.
It's a little bit different from basic. And we were pretty much getting from one area to another. And, to make it really short, if you understand what basic combat training is, or at least some kind of training.
Yeah, I was in the Army.
Oh, okay. Then you know. You know what I'm talking about then. And, all day was just normal routine procedure. And, that evening came around, one of the drill sergeants, I think it was Drill Sergeant Santini, came around and told us that we were going to have a mandatory formation, parade formation, about 7:30, which is after dinner. And we had dinner, and we were waiting around until 7:30 came around, and he came in our barracks and told us to start moving out into this area where all of us were supposed to meet. And there were like 1,300 guys out there at the parade formation. And we were standing around since 7:30 to about 8:10. It was by then dark, and it was humid, very humid, muggy. And we were just sitting around waiting for the company commander to come out and talk to us. He had a podium next to his office. We were supposed to come out and talk about our training course. Before that happened, somebody up front, some tall guy up front, in front of me, said something like, "What's that?" And, you know, I didn't pay no attention to it. I didn't know what he was talking about. And, about a minute, maybe less than a minute later, he said, "What's that up there?" And, you know, when he said that, my curiosity got the best of me. So, I told myself, well, I'm going to take a look and see what he's talking about here. So I asked him, and I said, what is it you want us to see, or what is it you're looking at? And he kind of pointed to the right side of the sky, and I looked up, and I see nothing but stars. And I said, well, I see stars. And he turned around and said, just wait for a second, watch. Okay, then I'll watch it. And then all of a sudden, this one star moved. And it was really unusual the way it moved. I'd like you to picture real quick. You got a cube of ice in your hand, and on the floor is a stainless steel floor. Put the ice cube on the floor and push it along that stainless steel floor, and you can see it gradually or smooth, how smooth it lifts, it goes passing by or moves the way it does on the stainless steel floor. And that's the way this object, this star, moved, like it was part of the sky. Just moved gradually across the sky, and it wasn't going fast. It wasn't like balloon or something floating. It moved in a good speed, and almost then it stopped. It went away from us. Okay. came back, stopped, and then moved again across the sky.
No noise.
Didn't hear no noise. It's a bright star, uh-huh. And then it stopped again and moved away, came back, and by this, everybody's pointing in the sky, and they all of us are looking at this, and I'm sure that all the other company men were watching us too in the sky, because we're making so much noise and saying something about that. And, you know, at this time when I started moved away, when I stopped and moved away again, one of the drill sergeants told us to stand at attention, which means that I couldn't move. I had to look straight. So when he said that, I stood straight up and looked, well, I was standing and I looked straight across. And, well, you know, I took a glance out of it and I lifted my head up just a bit to see where the thing went to, and it was gone. Gone from the sky. I guess it took off. And about this time, the company commander was just stepping away from his barracks or his building and walking up to this podium, started making a speech about what our training course was going to be. He said something about it takes about 6 to 8 weeks before we finish all these courses that we have to before we get graduated. And during this discussion or this speech that he was making, I hear this rushing noise. It's coming from my left side. And I knew I couldn't move, but I kind of leaned backward just a bit, just a tiny bit, just to take a glance at what's going on over to my left. And I see some of the Charlie Company men running out of formation. Others were standing still. And I see this bright, intensive light coming down a dirt road. Like it just descended. And I told myself, wow, you know, what is that? It looks like a chopper coming by. So I wanted to take a better look at this. So I leaned forward just a bit so I could get a better look at this thing. And I know I was supposed to move, but I don't know. I was looking at this thing that's kind of descending. And I'm looking at this, and I had to look on the side of the right side of this taller guy that was in front of me that I was just talking to. And by this time, this bright light was about tree level size, or tree level.
A bright light, big light?
It was a little bit more bigger than what I'd looked at when I was leaning backwards on that. Mm-hmm. And it's still bright, intense light. And it was just descending, and I thought, well, I guess this is a truck or something, you know. And I was going to say something to the guy who I was just talking to just in front of me just now, a tall person. And I looked up, and he's asleep. He was looking down to the ground. He's asleep. His eyes were closed. And I kept looking at him. I go, what? Hey, this guy's asleep. So I leaned back again. I don't know what happened here, but I guess I became unconscious for a few seconds because when I came to, I was aware of my surroundings, but I couldn't move. I couldn't move at all. I was frozen when I was standing there.
You were standing there in formation when this happened.
Yes, sir.
And did everyone pass out?
Well, the only part of my body that I could move was my upper body. My leg was still frozen, standing still there, and so I turned to my right, and my buddy who was standing onto my right just took off. He was running. And I noticed that there were a bunch of other guys standing around, but the rest were running to the tree line. And the rest were running, at least taking cover underneath this cross face that we have in our building. It's about 2 feet high. And these buildings are made in 1940s or 50s.
Yeah.
Two-story buildings.
Yeah, well, you were familiar with those, the traditional barracks.
Right, traditional barracks, two stories, big windows. So, you know what kind of building that we had to train in. And I noticed some of the guys are diving underneath this 2 feet-high crawl space and taking cover. The others were, like I said, running to the tree.
Well, what about the brass at this point?
Well, again, when I turned my upper body to my right, I noticed my buddy was taking off running, and I yelled out loud to him to come back and help me because I couldn't move. So when he did that, he grabbed my left arm and pulled real hard, and I kind of hopped, just a tiny hop away, from where I was standing. And we both started screaming, where's the captain, right? And we went to go see the captain. I mean, we went straight to where he was at. We knew where he was. So we went running over there, and we noticed there's a bunch of guys still standing around. And then when we both of us saw the captain, he was behind a podium, and he was asleep.
He was asleep?
He was asleep behind the podium.
He was laying down or standing up?
Standing up behind the podium, asleep. His eyes were closed. He's looking at the tabletop of the podium. And it looked like he was staring at the top of it, you know? And I yelled real loud. I mean, so out loud that everybody in the whole block could hear me. I told him to wake up. I yelled, wake up. And he didn't. He's still asleep. By this time, when my buddy was standing on my left, he was turned around and he was looking at something. And oh my God, his face, like he just seen something like horror. His face was all pale. His eyes were wide open. His mouth was kind of jawed open a little bit. And he's like, he's looking at something, you know, like an apparition or something behind me. I don't know, whatever this thing was right behind me or something. So I grabbed his shoulders or his collar, and I grabbed his other the shoulder, and when I did that, I shook him real hard and I told him, don't look at it. And when he sort of came to, he said, what's going on here? I just, you know, yelled at him, told him to don't look at it, just take cover. So we started, and I told him, let's run, take cover. And then we started running, both of us, away from the formation, or at least our formation. And we came to the first building of the barracks, and when we did that, some things were happening there, so we continued to run.
Some things were happening there, like what?
Well, we stopped there, the first building, and something underneath the underneath the crawl space, we saw a shadow moving around. So my buddy and I both were looking at it, and I told him, get out of here, run, take cover. I'll take care of this. And he didn't want it. He said, I'll stay here with you, and we'll see what this thing is. And we see the shadow slowly coming out of this, the crawl space, and I don't know.
Was it a human shadow?
Well, when it came out of the darkness, it was one of us. It was one of us. They were hiding underneath the crawl space, and he was asking.
You mean it was another soldier?
Yeah, another soldier. He was asking us what's going on, and then of course he didn't use those kind of words. He just used a lot of colorful.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I just don't want to make it sound bad, but then after what was happening, it was happening so fast. And we told him, hey, the captain's asleep, and I guess there were some more other people underneath the building, because he turned his head around and he says, hey, the captain's asleep, you know? So I guess there were some other people underneath the crawl space there. And we told him, take cover, and then he started crawling away from us, and my buddy and I started to run again to the second building behind this first one. And we heard our names called out at the far end of the second building. So we went over there. We started running over there to see what's going on over there, because I mean, they knew who we were. You know, they announced our names.
And you mean they called them out, like other soldiers calling your names?
Yeah.
Not over a speaker.
No.
Yeah.
Just yelling out our names, our last names. They knew who we were. So we ran over there, and there were like maybe four other people there underneath the building, or five. And we started arguing. The first thing we knew, we got underneath this crawl space, and it's really dark. And then we started arguing about what was going on.
Arguing like what? Some people saying it was okay, and other people saying no.
There was a bunch of disagreements and discussion. It really wasn't a discussion. It was a shouting match. And you know, we're cursing at each other and using.
So in other words, there was panic.
Panic. Exactly, panic. And then we came to the conclusion, after yelling and calling out each other names and stuff, it came to the conclusion that this was all Russian invasion.
Now, who came up with that idea?
One of us.
Okay.
And then I said something like, Russian invasion, those so-and-so made a mistake, you know, and all the gosh, it was just a free-for-all sort of, you know, yelling and screaming at each other for this. And we want to arm ourselves, but we didn't come to that discussion because all of a sudden we started hearing screaming.
Screams of other men.
On that formation that we left behind. It started from Alpha Company, Bravo, Charlie, and it came down to Delta.
Delta was you.
Yes, sir.
And most of your group ran?
Yeah, most of us reacted. That's one thing we did. Our training would give us some pointers on if anything happens, react. You know, that's the first thing you do, I guess, when you're frightened about something, you react to things. And
So you heard this commotion, this yelling, this screaming. Was that a panic, fear?
Fear. Because when one of them came down, this one scream that came up to Delta Company was a high-pitched scream. One of those grunting, sort of high-pitched. And it first started with someone screaming, Mommy. And it was bad. I mean, I could see or hear it right now. It was really bad.
But it was pitch dark, and you were away from there. You couldn't really see.
Well, you know, the stars were out. The lights were still on the buildings, you know. It wasn't that pitch dark. It was just we were underneath the crawl space, and that was dark. We couldn't see the center. The rest, I mean, it's just a nighttime. And you could see things. It's just that we were underneath this crawl space. When you hear these screaming going on, I told one of the guys underneath, we need to go out and do something about this. And he just turned around and says, forget it. They're already dead.
Now, who said that?
That was, his last name was Jones. He said that. I said, no. We got to go out there and do something. And this is when we started even arguing about the M16s because we're going to arm ourselves. We knew where the M16s were. So we're going to arm ourselves, go do something out there and help these guys out. But, you know,
anybody go to the rescue, or did you guys just stay hidden?
We were going to do that, and at that same time, what we're saying about arming ourselves and getting six M16s, whatever this event was going on, it was happening fast. And then all of a sudden, on that first building that we just passed, on the other side, the front side, I call it, this bright light, bigger light, it covered the whole window, the two-story window on the top. It just covered the whole thing, and it was so bright. It was silhouetting the frames. I mean, you could see the light beams coming through the building, and it was moving across the two-story building like it was searching for something. It was coming around. It was like a slow-moving object coming around, and we noticed something else. While we were looking at this brighter, bigger light, that there was four other guys up in front, building underneath the ground. Remember when a buddy of mine was running and ended up with the first building, and there was a guy underneath asking us what was going on? Well, there was four other people underneath with him. We started pounding the ground, telling them, get out of there, get out of there. They didn't move. They just lay there.
So you don't know if they were asleep or dead or comatose?
No, I mean, I threw a rock at the building, at their building, and hit the board. I mean, the building, and they didn't get up. They were just laying there. And this bright light kept coming around the end of the building, and one of again my close friend just telling me, what is that? And what do you know? And I said, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's coming our way. And he says, well, what do you want to do? And I go, I don't know. I mean, and I thought about it, and I said, wait, you know, we could go crawling into the center of the building. It's much more darker. So that's what we all did. We started crawling.
Crawling underneath the foundation, you mean?
Yes, sir. Underneath the building.
Yes, uh-huh.
We started crawling into the center of the building because it's much more darker. That's what I was saying. So we started doing that, and by this time, this bright, intense light, bigger size, was already on the grassy mall, and it stopped right there. And I noticed the building underneath, it was illuminating. And you could see the boards, the pipes, the foundation was standing on, the building, and us.
Yeah.
It was a bright object just sitting right down the grassy mall. And we were all looking at this, and we weren't sure what that was, you know. We weren't sure at all. By this time, and this is going to sound pretty wild, but I started hearing a voice, a female voice. It sounded like a metallic sort of faraway echoing, like a voice, and I don't know where it was coming from, but I know I was hearing it. And I'm asking the guys, hey, do you hear this? And they keep looking at each other like, hear what, Vasquez? You know, what are you hearing?
So they were not hearing it?
No, I'm hearing this, and I'm telling what I hear, and this is what I heard. It's okay. Don't be afraid. Come out. And I told the guys that night, and they were all kind of looking at me like, oh man, something's wrong with Vasquez now. You know, this stuff is really getting to him, or whatever it is that's going on. And I hear it again. I hear, it's okay. Don't be afraid. Come out. So I told the guys, listen, I'm hearing this again. And I told them I was going to crawl out there and find out what's going on. And you know, they kind of all shook their heads. You know, if Vasquez go out there, you know, I'll find out. So I started to crawl out of there. And when I was doing that, the funny thing is, well, not funny, but then this light was so intense and bright. My hands were disappearing in the light. So I had to keep my bearings to where I was going. And I was heading outwards, away from the building, and my hands would disappear every time when I start moving out away from the guys who I that was behind me. That was strange.
Well, you think it was because the light was so bright it was casting shadows and...
Well, that could be. I'm not sure what it was, but my hands would disappear every time. That could be because this light was so intensely white. Intense light. And just my hands would disappear and I'd go, whoa, what's going on here? And I had to keep my bearings to where I was going, crawling to. And one of the guys followed me and I said, no, you stay behind. You know, and I'm going to go find out what's going on. And when I came, I know that I came across the sidewalk, concrete sidewalk, because the concrete felt real cold. And I started getting on the grassy mold. I started crawling up this little hump. And then I stood up and looked to my left. I noticed this intense bright light just sitting there.
On the near the ground, on the top of the knoll?
Yes, sir, it was on the ground. And then I noticed that on the left side, the lower left of this bright light, I see this tiny something. I don't know what it was, but it scurried right back into the light again. I don't know what that was. It was something tiny, but it scurried right back into the light. So what I did next was I lifted my left hand over my forehead to shield this brightness out of my, away from my light, away from this light. And next thing I hear, I feel is this something sounding like a fuse being blown, electric fuse being blown, hit my left shoulder. And I go down and...
Was it that painful when it hit your shoulder or just a thud?
Sick. I got sick.
Okay.
And I went down and then I could hear one of the guys screaming my last name, and he's reaching for me, and I reach for him, and I'm trying to go through the crawl space, and then I feel something else hit my left shoulder, back left shoulder, and I become unconscious. That's it.
Okay, so you, that's all you remember of that night.
I remember a lot of things happened after that.
Yeah, we'll get to that after the commercial break here.
Okay.
You had a thud. Like, was it like somebody socking you, or?
Oh well, it felt like somebody hit me with a. What did it feel like someone hit me with a. Softball.
Okay, and it knocked you down.
Knocked me down.
And you felt sick.
I felt sick.
Sick at your stomach or what?
Yeah, sick in my stomach.
Your head spinning?
No, I was blacking out. I was.
Okay, you just felt sick and you were going to go under.
Yeah, and then I held the floor, I started started looking up, and I noticed one of the guys were reaching out for me, you know.
And that's the last you remember.
Well, another one hit my back. I don't know what it was, but it felt like a softball hit my back.
So, in other words, you were being hit with something, some sort of a weapon, probably.
Probably, yeah.
We're going to go to the break, and you're going to tell me what's next, John Vasquez, but did you have some wounds? Were you bruised there?
No, I don't think...
I mean, not that you know about.
Well, after whatever happened to us, we came back.
Okay, when we get back, let's pick back that back up. Okay, the incident at Fort Benning, and the book goes into great detail, even more than what we're doing here on the show. Plus, in the book, you follow your search for what happened. Is that right?
Yes, sir. I've been trying to search for everything I could about what happened to us at Fort Benning.
A lot of 1,300 men there, and you haven't found any of the other men?
I did, sir. I found my drill sergeant, Sergeant Santini.
Okay, we'll talk about all that when we come back. I'm Jerry Pippendug. Don't worry. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, a picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally. 928-707-0291. Or visit his website.
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
An incredible story, incident at Fort Benning. This is the second story we've had about an incident like this at Fort Benning. John Vasquez is our guest, and he's written a book called Incident at Fort Benning. And it happened in the 70s, right?
Yes, sir, 77.
And what time of year?
September 2nd, 1977.
And you had just started your second 8 weeks infantry training.
No, it's our first day at Fort Benning.
Okay, but you had already been through basic training before that.
I already have.
Yeah, right. This was the second 8 weeks of the infantry training.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you blacked out when we left. What happened next?
Well, what happened next is I slowly started to remember things back in April 1989.
So you don't know what happened next? You don't remember waking up in an infirmary?
What happened is that...
Do you remember staying in that place for 8 weeks? Or 6 weeks, or however long the training was?
Yes, sir. I was there for a while, yes, sir. It's just that what happened to us after I passed out, as the memory came back slowly, not all of a sudden, but as the memory goes, I remember that there was someone standing on my left, another one to my right, and there was sort of a cover over my body, and both of them was telling me to keep my eyes closed, no matter what.
You think these were medics?
All I can say is that they were talking to me, and I wasn't saying anything. Except that I did say something to him.
But how long was it before you even remembered something like this happened? As far as you're concerned, the next morning, you were back training, and you thought nothing of this and didn't remember anything for a long time. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. That's what happened is that after this incident, this thing that, whatever it was that took us into this craft, whatever, we went through all kinds of physicals.
So you remember later that you were abducted?
Well, yeah, because back in April 89, I had a nightmarish dream, and what happened is I seen this blurry face, and I don't know what that was. And the next morning, I focused on this blurry face, and it was my buddy who was standing in formation with me. And he was saying, John, you know. And I was surprised to see his face, and I said, hey, I remember this guy's face. And slowly but gradually, I started to focus on everything that was going on.
Were you out of the service by then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I mean, all this flood of memory didn't happen right away. It took time and try to look into things and what else I need to find out about this.
What is the best reconstruction of this event that you have put together? I mean, the best idea of what you think happened next.
Well, I got two things. One, of course, the word is not to be used in military because they don't seem to agree with that. This word called test. It's actually called an exercise. So I believe that two things. One is that we went through a hallucinogenic test because it was after dinner and it could have been in the food that all of us hallucinated something. And the next one is definitely we did, all of us did see something in the sky.
So my first thought when I heard about this originally was perhaps this was some sort of a mind control operation in training for you people, and they were in this group, the 1,300 men, more or less. But you've come to the conclusion that it's more than that. It was actually extraterrestrial, or am I putting words in your mouth?
Well, again, I'm looking at two avenues right here. One could have been, like you said, an exercise.
An exercise to see how people would behave.
Right, how they would react and what would...
What kind of unit was this? Was this a normal infantry unit, or was this a specialized force?
Normal infantry.
Okay,
and,
okay.
We were just starting, and we were ready for this training course. And
yeah, the Army is certainly capable of playing games with you, but...
I heard that they could drop anything on us at any time, anywhere.
But I sense that you really think this is something else.
Well, and that's the thing that I'm also looking at. You know, we saw something in the sky, and, I'm looking at this very carefully on everything I try to find about what was going on in September of 1977. And my book has a lot of things in there, and I saw, about basically what was going on that was very special at that time. And there was an exercise called JAWS. It's an acronym for Joint Attack Weapon System. And Secretary of the Army Clifford Alexander was present in the month of September. He had a press interview. And this exercise was going on an airplane. Now, I looked into that, and I know that you know what A-10 is all about.
It's a low-flying, slow craft, a warthog.
Yes, sir, tank killer. And, I looked at this, and I asked the Inspector General's office concerning this A-10 airplane and also possible UFO, and also there was another story in the same month that there was a measles outbreak strike post troops, and that was the headline. They were talking about us, and this measles outbreak was German measles. And I asked the Inspector Generals about this concerning these three items, and they responded with a letter stating that these things that you asked is not true.
Well, now I was in the Army, and especially in that second 8 weeks of training, and even to a certain degree basic training the first 8 weeks, you develop friendships with other soldiers, and some of them you stay in touch with. Did you stay in touch with some of the troops?
Well, we're getting way ahead with the story, but I'll tell you what happened at the end of the... end of the month week, which is the last week of September, we had this female lieutenant come around our post.
Really? A female? The Army's changed. When I was in the 60s in the Army, I'd like to have seen a woman, even if she were a lieutenant.
You know, and it was a surprise to all of us. I mean, we didn't know who she was and what was she doing here. And then she wasn't alone. She was with six other drill sergeants that we'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. These guys were like ex-football players.
Yeah, top troops.
6'7", 6'8", you know, big guys. And, you know, we're all talking about this and you know, we didn't know who she was and what she's doing around
so
here.
So what was she doing there?
Well, we got the word within, 2 days? You know, some of the guys found out what she was all about, and they were saying she was a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And, you know, I told myself, no, I'm not going to be talking to her. No way. I got nothing to say to her. And so the rest of the people, the rest of the guys were saying the same thing, you know. No, that's nothing here that we need to talk to her about. So, you know, one day, well, I was watching TV at the TV room, and then I wanted to walk outside for a while. So I was just coming down the stairway from this building that was in where the TV is, and I noticed one of my buddies was walking in and walking with her. And normally he would have came up to me and said, hey, John, what's going on? What's happening? You know, one of those kind of discussions. And she just turned around to him, and she just looked at him like she's telling him, like, get lost. So he just turned around and walked away from me. And I go, wait a minute, that's not, you know, why'd he do that for? I mean, you know, I was telling myself, what's going on here? And she started walking up the stairway, and so I slewed it, and she slewed it. And next thing what she did was odd, too. She just pulled my left hand to herself, and I heard her say, I'm going to hate myself for doing this. And I felt a sharp pain on my hand, like something was jabbed in there. And I was under drug-induced hypnosis. And she was asking me all kinds of questions about what happened that night to all of us. And then when she was finished asking all the things, even private things, she told me I was going to forget everything I asked you, everything that you know. And how she did that was also painful. She put her left finger on my left temple and her right finger on my right temple, and she just pressed it real hard. And I was under hypnosis and also drug-induced hypnosis, so I felt this pain, and she was telling me, you're going to forget everything.
And you did not remember any of this till later.
I didn't remember this until April 1989. All this was...
You don't remember her name, do you?
Under hypnosis, I remember her name was Richardson.
Did you try to find out if there's a lieutenant?
Oh, yeah, we did, and she never returned my message at all, my phone call.
Okay, your other buddies... And similar things happened to them?
I believe it did, because I wasn't the only one who was there. I mean, they had to have something happen to them, too. And she worked individually, one by one, I'm sure of it. Or maybe by groups, who knows. She was good. She was really, really, really good. I mean, she was a psychiatrist.
Okay, let's get back to your search. You're still looking for people that were in that unit, right?
Oh, yeah, and I found my captain also. Captain Keel.
The captain that was asleep?
Yeah, behind the podium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found him.
What did he have to say?
I asked him. He lives in Phoenix, Alabama. Phoenix City, Alabama?
Yes, uh-huh.
He just, you know, I called him. I asked him, you know, a bunch of questions about this. And I asked him about the formation and also about what happened to us. And, you know, he gave me almost like a history. Brief history of what he'd done, that he went to West Point, went to Vietnam, came back to the state, went to several other, forts,
mm-hmm.
Ended up at Fort Benning, and, you know, I asked him, fine, then you must remember this also, two downed choppers report that I'd found at Fort Rutgers, Alabama. Then he has to remember, one of them was on fire. And I asked him that, do you remember that chopper that was on fire? And he just paused for a while, and he said, no. You know, that's like asking someone if they remember their house on fire, and he couldn't remember that. Either he's not telling me anything, or he has some problem with his memory still. That part of his, that part of that Fort Benning formation is and also the other thing that happened.
Did you find anybody yet out of those 1,300 men that remember this?
Yeah, I even contacted commanding officer of Fort Benning, General Licey, William J. Licey.
He talked to you?
I gave him the password. I gave him the password, live ammunition. And he paused for a second, and he says, I remember you. I said, yes, sir. He knew what was going on. I mean, he was, and when I talked to him, he must have been in his 80s, but he was sharp. His memory was just fine. There was nothing wrong with when I gave him the password. He knew right away. So he knew what was going on.
Well, what do you think was going on?
Again, I'm still at an impasse. Let's say a crossroads. Two things. Like I said, one, it could have been a hallucinogen after dinner. They're testing on us with whatever, sound, lights, something. And we all had to react on how we, how the Army wanted us to react on this. Or we definitely saw something in the sky, and it wasn't human.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, John Vasquez, we're going to ask you to relate some of the dreams and the abduction of going into a craft and follow up on that part of the story. I thought we should at first address the possibility it was dirty tricks, mushrooms, MK Ultra type thing. But let's talk about the other reality. It might have been something from another world. You still entertain that idea?
It still comes back to me.
Are you leaning toward that?
I'm leaning toward both.
You just don't know, in other words.
Well, yeah. I mean, my memory keeps coming back, and it's telling me this thing, or, you know, also, it could have been the Army who's, you know, always doing something every day and not telling his...
The other thing, have you considered the possibility that maybe it was extraterrestrial and then the mind control took effect later, that they tried to change and put in screen memories or whatever?
Yeah, that's what I'm also entertaining too on this.
Yeah.
Is that you know, after this abduction, they came back, and or they, what I'm saying is the Army, decided to go ahead and use a psychiatrist to
make sure you didn't talk about it, and it did work for
you. Yeah, it worked
for what, from 77 to
89,
12 years.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Incident at Fort Benning is the name of the book. And John Vasquez is our guest. I'm Jerry Pippin.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate magazine.
Fate.
Fate magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.
I just talked to a whole bunch of people every day about this, and they're torn between the two things I've been torn between, and it's like a fork in the road or a crossroad. And then they come up with some ideas that, you know, the military could have been trying to impress whatever they can so that we won't remember nothing at all of what happened. But I woke up, I guess, you know, started remembering things.
John Vasquez explaining to us there exactly where he is at the fork of the road, as they say. You do have memories of being aboard a craft.
Yes, sir, I remember that.
Tell me a little bit about that. Tell that to our listeners.
Well, I'm following directions. Kept them closed, and I felt this cover over me. and I know I was being lifted off the ground. It felt like I was getting really light. My whole body was felt light. Like I was sort of being...
So you're pretty sure you weren't just life-flighted someplace by a helicopter?
You know, I could have felt the wind or the blade making noises or something, but nothing like that. I just kept... I always felt light. Like a marshmallow, real light. And it started floating to this light in the sky or a door in the sky, and then I was heading toward that. And the next thing I could hear and remember is that this female, the same voice that I heard earlier, is telling me that we want to know what's going on, and there's something I need to know about. Is that
this female voice was the same voice you heard in your head while you were underneath the...
Yeah. Underneath the crawl space.
And it was in your mind more than in your ears.
Yeah, it's in my mind. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to know what feelings was all about. What's this about feelings? And I explained to her there's two types of feelings. There's one that you can put your hands together and rub them together, and that's one of the feelings. Do you feel your hands? That's what I'm saying. She says, yeah. Oh, not that. She said yes or something like this, and then she was... I could feel that she was feeling her hands. And the next one, I asked her to stand in front of a door, her door, and if she felt anyone behind that door.
Her door, she was standing in front of a door on the craft?
On the craft, and I don't know how far she was, but then I could sense that she was standing right next to me.
And this was a regular humanoid female.
I don't know if a humanoid, but I know it's a female.
And it looked human.
And I asked her if you feel anybody behind this door. And I told her this was the second one about when it comes to feeling things. And the impression I got from her is that she was elated. Like she was really happy to know that this is what feeling's all about. You know, and that's an odd feeling. But I knew that she was in charge of things because I think these other people, these other, I don't know, smaller guys, I think, she was in charge of them. She was telling them to go do this and that.
Smaller guys, but they were humans? Or were they little grays?
Maybe grays, because...
You say maybe, you're not sure?
Right now, at this time when I'm talking to you, I'm saying maybe grays, because I didn't see him yet. I didn't see him. I'm hearing it's her. She was in charge of things. She was the boss.
Was she similar to the lieutenant?
I don't think so. I think she's a little bit more taller. And when they took off, I woke up a little bit.
So this was an incredibly beautiful woman.
I don't know. I didn't see her. I didn't get to see her. But then when they took off somewhere, I kind of woke up a little bit. It's like waking up in the morning and my eyes are still kind of closed. Mm-hmm. I woke up a little bit and I looked to my left and I see rows of men laying on metal slabs. And when I kind of glanced up a little bit, it's like being in a dome, like a mall.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk in a mall, you know, the ceiling's really high.
Yeah.
Well, there's rows of men just lying on slabs, and it goes around this bend. And it wasn't just me. There was like hundreds of guys. Just
hundreds of people on slabs, so. Like in a mortuary.
Like a mortuary. And then each one of us...
All on the same level or different story?
Same level.
A warehouse type thing.
Yeah, a warehouse type thing.
Maybe like the food court in the mall.
That's pretty good. But it's like we went through a physical, but each one of us went through a physical like being on a conveyor belt, one after another, like, okay, this guy's good, this guy's fine, all right? And this is a physical.
And a couple of people were checking you, or some kind of machine was checking you, like an MRI, or what?
There were a bunch of people there.
Bunch of humans.
Humans.
That at least you thought they looked like humans.
They looked like humans.
Yeah.
And we went through all that, and the next thing I remember is that I'm talking to this being, straight in his face, looking straight at his face, and his eyes was almond shaped, dark.
Dark eyes, a being like a gray?
Looks like a gray, and like Chinese, his eyes was like a Chinese, slant, he went back to his temple a little bit, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and he's telling me it's a guy. I know it's male. And he's telling me I need to look in his eyes, and I go, no, no, because you scare me. I ain't going to look in there. He goes,
she's talking to you verbally?
No.
In your mind?
In my mind. And I'm saying, no, I'm not going to look at you. And he said, you know, it will help you. And I'm going, no, no, no. I'm not going to look in your eyes. And I'm thinking, I go, well, you're going to help me. And he goes, yes, just look into my eyes. So I did. And three things popped into my mind.
Yes.
One was, I'm standing in the middle of the ocean. Thousands of, I could see miles and miles of just water. I'm standing right in the middle of the ocean somewhere. That was the first image. The second one was I was standing, I guess, in front of a huge viewpoint or a TV set, and I'm watching a planet being destroyed, falling apart. And the third one, the image that came to me was a humanoid face, pale, white,
but human.
It had a long face, long nose, skinny nose, like a pencil-shaped mouth, and the eyes were like mercury, and it was wearing a white dressing hat. And I'm looking at him, and whatever it was, a humanoid.
But you couldn't tell if it was male or female?
Just the face. I'm looking at the face, uh-huh. Pale, white, paste-like face. And that's the last thing I remember. The next thing I remember what happened is that I'm coming through. All of us were back in formation again.
Where were you? This was more or less a dream. You went to bed and this happened, or do you... Give me a little background on how you got to this point.
Well, after I got hit with something on my shoulders and in my back, we went through all of this.
So, I mean, your memory came back from that point. In other words, you suddenly, 12 years later, remembered...
Not all of it, no.
But you remembered partly that they took you aboard a craft.
It took time before I remembered everything that was happening to me. My memory didn't just flood my mind with all the stuff. It just gradually took its time to come about what was going on. And I was talking to a group of people. I was seeing a group of people who was also having problems with abductions. And, you know, I was listening to their story. And gradually I started, helping myself to find out what was going on.
Now, you started remembering this in 89, not quite 20 years ago. During this time, this 20-year period, two decades almost, have you ran across any of the other people that were there at Fort Benning back in September of 1977, right? That remembered the same thing you remember? I mean, like this part of it?
No, I didn't. I never came across anyone.
So your search is still going on for validation on this?
Everything. I'm talking about everything. Not just the people I've already talked to who was there, but, I need to find out what happened to the rest. I mean, physically find out what their problem might be.
Have you ever tried to... I don't know if they're available, even medical records from the military. Your medical records?
My medical records I got from...
the VA?
From the veterans.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't request other people's medical records because I don't know their Social Security numbers. But I did try to find out about the paycheck and things like that from... it's in Indiana. They have a huge... record keeping for paychecks.
Yes.
And I asked just for the names. That's all I asked. I didn't ask for their addresses or their telephone number or their Social Security number, but just the names. And the response that I got in writing from them is that they could not release those information to me, even under the Freedom of Information Act.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left. What's next for you? What are you going to continue to look? We urge. Do you have a way for people that are listening? There may be somebody listening that this will remind them of that they may have been there at the same time, in other words.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people.
I guess they can contact me, and I can contact you. Jerry at jerrypippin.com. Just send me an email, folks. If you have any information about this incident at Fort Benning, you just don't know if it was a mental trick or it was actually an encounter with extraterrestrials.
As far as this, I've come this far, and I'm saying this. All the things I've found points in a direction that something unusual happened at Fort Benning. That's the word I like to use right now. Something unusual. It wasn't the norm.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you, John, for being on, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
I do really appreciate it, and hopefully everybody see me on YouTube, too, because I'm on that YouTube, and Channel 6 News did a little segment on this story.
They're in San Diego.
And I'm looking forward to the possibility of making a movie out of this, too, because, that's something is not finished yet. I'm sure there's something more that will come out of this, and people out there are still, I don't know if they remember anything yet, or I still believe that they may be walking around with repressed memories out there.
John, thanks very much, and good luck on your search for reality and what really happened.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. I do appreciate this, too, and hopefully I can talk to you some more about this.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Incident at Fort Benning's the name of the book. John Vasquez has been our guest. Jane Swartley has been our web producer. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Thanking you for listening. Cheers.
David Sarita.
A retired Air Force colonel once told me that UFOs are more classified than the atomic bomb. More classified than the atomic bomb. Why? Why is anti-gravity and zero-point energy more classified than the atomic bomb? Because the first country, the next country who figures out zero-point energy and anti-gravity is going to be king of airspace on this planet. You know, our F-22s and our fighter wing jets are going to be obsolete technology. I mean, fighters that have to use jet propulsion engines and have to make slow banking turns are not going to be able to perform against UFOs or anti-gravity technology that can stop on a dime and turn right at 90 degrees. They're just not going to be able to maintain themselves in a military sense against this type of technology. So this is why UFO technology is more classified than the atomic bomb. This is why the media laughs at this technology, and they're in on this somehow. They don't want you to know, they don't want me to know, that UFOs have crash-landed in our atmosphere and in our planet, and we have retrieved saucers and we have reverse-engineered the technology to find out how these things work.
From Here to Andromeda, a four-hour documentary produced by David Sarita that tells the who, the why, the where, and the how of the UFO story. It's only $25 for a four-hour in-depth documentary. Order now from shopjerrypippin.com.